So that's why I'm sure I'm here.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call to order the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're going to have some public hearings today. I should make a statement regarding the bills that we do have scheduled for public hearing, Senate Bills 728, 729, and 730. They're on the agenda to get them into the process of going into the public hearing. We may have additional testimony after today on these bills, but we wanted to get them, into the hopper for decisions that are going to be made as we continue our path during this session. So with that, I'm going to just go through the three bills. I will take testimony in the order of people signing up, and so I'm going to call a public hearing on Senate Bill 728.
Chair, members of the committee, members of the committee, Senate Bill 728 requires that a court that is sentenced someone to a sentence of less than 24 months rather than the current 12 months to the jurisdiction of the local county supervisory authority rather than the Department of Corrections. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is basically taking Senate Bill 1145 from 1995, the local jurisdiction population for felons, and rather than having a sentence of under 12 months, felony would be under 24 months. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I remember correctly, this is a bill that we filed as a result of the Governor's Reset Commission.
And that's why I want to get on the record. My understanding that the purpose of the bill was to put in motion what came out of the Reset Commission as a means of potentially having savings at the state and also maybe being more effective in dealing with a certain set of population by keeping them in the community where they would be able to be monitored and seen into programs that would assist them through their probation period or while they're in custody at a local level. With that, we're going to bring up Sheriff Diana Simpson and Sheriff Rob, I guess it's Gordon.
Thank both of you for being here. If you
know, whoever wants to start off, just put your name on the record and give the testimony.
Sheriff Diana Simpson, Benton County. If this Senate bill is passed, Chair, it would have a pretty huge impact to the Benton County Jail. The Benton County Jail is the smallest jail per capita in the state of Oregon, and that's even when we rent 40 additional beds from surrounding counties. As I looked at just a snapshot of our jail population last week and the impact that this might have, it would mean that we would have to continue to enforce release a number of individuals that we already do and increase our capacity over and above close to 12%. And it's interesting because I just did a small snapshot looking at our jail and what that impact would be, and then compared it with Sheriff Gordon, where he did a much more formal analysis, and our numbers came out very similar. The problem for the Benton County Jail, and we call it a jail now, we used to call it a corrections facility, is that we, because of the number of inmates that we have, the turnover between transporting and keeping them locally incarcerated, they serve about 5 days at any given time. So we don't have any programs. If we had programs, I'd call it a corrections facility, but we're just warehousing people. It's just a jail. And the cost for our jail, because of the design, is about $150 a day. So currently, those local control inmates that we have, we receive about $84 a day from Department of Corrections, and that may go up this next biennium. But if we add this additional inmates to our jail, it's going to have a devastating impact financially, not only for our jail costs, but also in maintaining our population in the jail as it is. Our $150 jail bed cost is because we have to contract out for food services, for laundry, for everything. It's just it's such that we just can't.
It's not cost efficient at all.
So. I know that also in Multnomah County, they have similar issues. Their daily bed cost is even a little bit higher. Theirs is $179 a day for an inmate. And so, you know, there again, the general county general fund is subsidizing what local control doesn't make up. And this would also have a pretty significant impact on their workload as well. My understanding is that in 2010, they sentenced 78 offenders to local control sentences of 12 months or less, and sentenced 482 offenders to prison sentences of 13 to 24 months. And so you can see how that would have a pretty significant impact for Multnomah County as well.
Thank you. Sheriff Gordon?
Yes, thank you, Chair Przanski and Senators. I appreciate the time. I have some very similar comments, actually, in really a couple areas. One is the funding attached to current Senate Bill 1145. And then second is an analysis that I think is very accurate on what it would do to all of our jail systems in Oregon. So I'll start first with the funding. And historically, every 2 years I am representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. My professional history, I've been working in the corrections industry in jails and correctional facilities since I was a young man for over 30 years, and I'm the lead jail inspector for the state for the sheriff. So that's my background.
Sheriff Gordon, I don't know if you did this. I didn't catch it if you did. Could you just put your name on the record?
My name is Sheriff Rob Gordon from Washington County, Oregon.
Great, thank you.
Senate Bill 1145, every 2 years, you'll see a group of sheriffs come down, and we devote a tremendous amount of time, state employees devote a tremendous amount of time on what the proper level of funding for these prisoners can be. Eventually, the sheriffs agreed that we'll just attach our funding to whatever it costs DOC, their cost per day, which, of course, causes us to look at DOC costs and wonder if those are full cost recovery, and some of our opinion is that they're not, that they're understating the cost there as well. In Washington County, I can tell you that our cost, depending on what you include of them, at a bare bones minimum is about $110 a day and up to $150 if you include all of our overhead costs. So those are the ranges we're talking about. And to compare apples to apples, I think we'd be in about the $110 range if we were comparing with DOC. That's not a full cost recovery model. However, it doesn't count my time or the commissioner's time or county council time, things like that. So at the current rate, Washington County citizens would be taking money from their general fund and other services to fund any more of these prisoners. The bigger issue is the chart I placed in front of you, and if I could take just a minute to explain how this came about, the methodology. I'm fortunate enough to have some very good analysts in my office. It's a little bit larger. We run the second largest system, and we have a team of folks that do this, and I asked them to look at every prisoner that had been sentenced from Washington County during the last 2 years to this period of time that would have fell into this class of folks, so from 366 days to 730 in the state system, and to count those up year by year and tell us how it would impact us. You can see the ratio at the top where it says legislative impact on required bed space, 7 to 10. Roughly, they're saying that for every 7 prisoners we have in custody today, we would have 10 tomorrow. Our jail capacity, including a correction center, which is a minimum custody work release transition center, is 772 people, and we are almost always full, right in the 750 range. So if you add that 7 to 10 ratio, we're looking at about another 300 prisoners every day. Every day. Every day.
Sheriff Gordon, just since we're on this this chart, instead of waiting until you complete your testimony, for me, for some clarity, and if we have other questions regarding the chart, we'll take those up now instead of waiting. So on the legislative impact as required, you're saying today versus tomorrow. Are you inferring that tomorrow being, if this was actually passed, was in effect?
Yes, and if it was fully implemented and everybody that was sentenced to less than 24 months, so a year from now, a year and a half from now, probably is a more realistic answer to that, Senator. But
okay.
Excuse me for that.
Senator Wissa.
Thank you, Chair Przanski. Sheriff Gordon, it's my understanding the purpose of this concept is to shift low-impact inmates more to alternative means of supervision rather than full-time incarceration. So does your table take that into consideration, or is this a straight-up incarcerating? Because, I mean, that's the first, my first concern is that if we're simply shifting from the Department of Correction in a bed to the county jails in a bed, there obviously will be no cost savings and no change in outcomes. If we're changing the whole paradigm, it would be a reduction in the number of people in those beds from any given night, and it would also provide opportunities to make some of the other community corrections paradigms work better.
So great point, Senator, but you have to look at history to see what the reality of the future would be. And the truth is that Senate Bill 745 or 1145 inmates, the plan all along was for very few of those people to be in custody in jail situations, and the opposite is actually true. This is a group of folks that are highly impacted by drug use and alcohol use. They're repetitive criminals, and this group we're talking about is the same type of folk that would require at least a good period of time of incarceration before that transitional period is met, before that transition period starts. Transition won't move from jail to non-jail. It'll move from jail and the counties that have transition centers to that. But there's only three or four counties in the entire state that have those kind of centers, and it would be a huge expense for the smaller counties to form them. Last I heard, Clatsop County was shutting theirs down because it was ineffective in cost. So what programs are we talking about? Is it day reporting? Well, those programs don't really exist, and they certainly wouldn't be at the right custody level for this group of people. If I had a third point on this, I would think that it's tragic that the state penitentiary system doesn't have a vibrant program system. They're a well-funded organization. There are counties that do have good programs in place. We're fortunate enough to be one of those, and we're having very good results. But we're having very good results because we're extremely efficient and we're operating at capacity. We can't afford anymore. We don't have the room. So as we're going through this, well, the design capacity is on the left column. The operational capacity is what counties are currently funding. If you apply the 7-10 ratio to their current population, the red numbers indicate overcapacity if the jail was full all the time. So the beds that are open, let's say in Klamath County, well, they're one of the few jails that would actually have capacity even after this system. But the red numbers are over capacity in every way. And if you look at Washington County, I included our transition beds there. That's 787. And in fact, all of these numbers we asked the counties, what are all of your beds available, not just your jail beds? So I'm trying not to exaggerate this. I think they're very accurate numbers. In fact, I think they may be underestimated a tiny bit. When I say 300 for us, it's the last count I looked at was 320, the impact, after this was fully implemented. So if you multiply this issue by saying 1145 is not funded appropriately for most of our, especially urban counties, and none of our jail systems, with very few exceptions, are built to the capacity that would require holding these folks. And again, the capacity is all the beds that I know of today that are built anywhere, whether they're open or not. It seems like this is a potential huge domino effect to local communities. I was talking to the Lake County Sheriff on Friday about this bill. He has a very small jail. And he said, his current population was 16 folks. He estimated he would have 18 sentenced 2 year and under people in his jail. He only has 17 beds. That means that he would have no pretrial inmates. And we tried it in our jail operations, about a 50-50 split's really pretty necessary for pretrial confinement. With less pretrial beds, we have more failed to appears. The system slows down, our public defender's costs increased, and the dominoes start falling to a very inefficient system. And it's actually the opposite of what we're all trying to do at the local level. So my plea is to to really examine those dominoes and take some time and talk to your local elected officials and partners. And I don't think this is a good idea. I would highly discourage it to send anybody for that length of time to the local community. And in fact, the state should be encouraged to increase those programs and pre-release programs so that they do a better job. It is possible without a lot of extra expense. In fact, I think it can be done with little or no extra expense if it's done right. Now, I'm sort of preachy here. I apologize for that. But I'd be glad to take any questions. The sheriffs of Oregon and OSSA are opposed to this bill, and thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. So I understand the position that the association is taking at this time. I'm assuming that yourselves might be willing or interested in being part of a work group if we're going to try to see if there's some way to maybe make some accommodations.
Well, we're certainly willing to sit on any work groups, either ourselves or other sheriffs, you bet.
All right. So just a couple things. When I look at the list here, I see Lane County says 629 for design and then 629 for operational capacity. I don't believe that's correct. And I know there's at least one person here that might be able to give us a clarification if you can. Yeah. But I thought that we have like a complete floor that's shut down.
I think you're right. So that might be a wrong number. I think you're right on that.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll look at this. I did look at the total numbers. My understanding is that we have somewhere in the range of 900,000 beds statewide that are not currently being utilized. And that includes the facility that's mothballed up in Multnomah County. And some of the discussions was, as Senator Wissett has said, is that potentially getting people who we know are, let's say, more low risk, but need to have the treatment, if you could partner up. Of course, that means more money. I understand that. I would agree with you. I was here when 1145 was passed. I still don't think we have really reached the level that we should be for being a true partner under the 1145. And so if we're going to, let's say, try to expand this, of course, we have to look at the adjustments and making certain that we're actually standing true to what we commit to. The other part on this, just for you to think about, not necessarily a response now, is that if we do have this number of bed spaces around the state, potentially where those geographic areas that have the capacity for additional prisoners could be maybe act as regional centers. And part of the theory that I've heard is that if you have someone that's under probation and you got the probation officer who finds them out of compliance and to kind of using the Hawaii Hope Project of getting them sanctioned immediately and getting them into a facility, and that seems to have the short burst frequent, incarcerations for short period of times seem to have a better impact on getting people to change their behavior.
Yeah, boy, there's a lot of things in that statement. First of all, in the numbers, I had my folks put this together late Friday afternoon, and there may be a minor discrepancy. This shows about 1,100 vacant beds in the state right now. I think that's pretty close, but I'll vet those numbers, and we'll go through them again. As far as regional correctional facilities go, they work very well in some parts of the state. They take a tremendous amount of work and effort to do, and the folks have to be willing to work that way. We found a tremendous number of probation violators in our jail that are sentenced now for less than 30 days. When 1145 started, this is sort of an offshoot, there was many more that were more than 30 days. The change here, what it really does is, because 1145 doesn't pay for those less than 30-day sentences, we still have them in custody, but our finances are even worse. So that's sort of a side comment based on what you were saying. And the other issue is costs in regional jails are very deceptive. And, for example, Wapato, I mean, it's sitting there and it's vacant, and you say, well, let's use that. Well, I can't afford $179 a day to pay Multnomah County to house a prisoner, and that's what they would charge. And that's a ridiculous sum of money to ask a county to pay, so it would have to be structured in a way that it was cost-effective to do so.
All right. Senator,
it's possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2 points. One, right now, I believe in the current budget, the Community Corrections has about a $214 million budget. and of that, almost half comes from a federal ARRA grant, which is sort of a chilling thing. I mean, if you're going to have more money, the first thing you have to do is backfill that $103 million grant, and that before you get more money. And I think this program would require a lot more money. And the second thing is that we do not, in many of the counties, have an adequate detox center. In many counties, we don't have any detox center at all. And if these things are going to work, there has to be an investment in that area as well, because first you're going to have to get these people cleaned up to some degree before you can ever hope to get them out in the community. So would you comment on that?
Well, that's sort of apples and oranges, I think. You know, when I think of detox, it's usually a civil issue. It's not attached to a criminal event. It's a very fairly short term. Something like the Hooper Center in Portland is an example of a detox center when I think of those. And so it's not a very long term facility. If there's a crime attached, our jails are detox centers, and you know, sometimes those go on for several weeks. But when you consider that 60 to 70 to probably 80% of the folks coming in our front door, and we have almost 18,000 of those a year in Washington County, are under the influence and are drug abusers and alcohol abusers, detox is a very real part of life for us today. But detox is not the physical detox is not the most important part of setting somebody up for success on parole and probation. You have to get through that physical part, and then you have to start with some very effective programming while still in custody and get their minds right, give them some skills that they need to be effective when they're let out the door. And I have professional program staff working for me, and they can do that in sometimes 60 days, sometimes 90 days, sometimes as little as 30, and sometimes it takes much longer than that, depending on the person's background and what's going on. You know, if you attach an escape history to the person or an assault history to the person, then public safety becomes a very real concern on where you're going to house these people. And those decisions will follow the local sheriff. And on classification, I'd say it's a very complicated issue, but to think that these people are going to be pushed out of medium or higher levels of security very quickly, I think that's a mistake. I think that there'll be a longer period of incarceration than you're anticipating. And peraps that last 60, 90, 120 days could be very effectively spent in transition back to the community. But that could be done now. It's just not at the state level. And those open beds around the state, I'll bet you the sheriffs would be glad to rent those beds in a transitional capacity to the state of Oregon. I don't have any of those beds. I don't think Sheriff Simpson has any of those beds either. But I think we can help the state in that way. It's still going to be fairly expensive, but maybe not as expensive as this program has the potential to be.
I want to push back just a little bit. All counties don't have the professional staff and the capacity that Washington County does. For instance, in Klamath, there's the liability issue is so high that very inebriated people that are taken into custody are not taken to the jail. They're taken to the emergency room. Correct. To be detoxed. This is just an unacceptable practice, but it's driven by the reality. And so, I mean, that's my the genesis of my point, is that you're fortunate, but many counties are not, and these people are not, there is no facility to handle them. You take them to the emergency room, and they're taking up emergency beds at a huge cost. So.
Correct. And just on civil detox, the current law, if there's not one open, they go to jail. And certain jail policies will prohibit a person who's in medical distress from, well, in fact, that's a state jail standard. If they're in medical distress, they can't come in. My guess and my experience shows that that's true also in the detox centers you're talking about. If somebody is that medically fragile, a center like Cooper would probably not receive them either. They would require them to receive medical treatment first. You know, if if the blood alcohol content is in the near-death range. I would think that that they would come with that same decision. So, and I don't know what the policy is in Klamath County. Our policy is to, you know, and unless there is a medical emergency, we'll take them in our door. And it's we're there anyway, so it doesn't add a huge expense for the most part for us.
All right.
If Senator, if I may,
yeah, I was going to ask
just a couple of comments to respond to some of the questions is, you know, this concept of 24 months or less and the alternative programs and the alternative sanctions and some of that, it wouldn't change the paradigm in certainly Benton County and a lot of other counties around the state because we simply don't have the programs. As I mentioned earlier, our turnover is 5 days. Our average inmate spends 5 days in jail because of that turnover. We have the history with 1145 where we were quite progressive at the time in that we established a day reporting center and we had lots of alternative programs at the time, but as time has gone on and the money has changed and it has diminished, we've had to eliminate a lot of those programs so that we don't have a day reporting center. Our transition center is 6 beds and it's strictly paid for out of a local operating levy that's designed for people coming out of prison that have no home or any place else to stay. Detox in our jail, once they've been checked out by the hospital and they come back to our jail, we'll work with them and we'll monitor them. What happens is they take up our holding cells because of the constant monitoring, and it shuts down our jail. And then we end up with deputies and officers holding inmates in the back seat of their car outside the jail waiting to get in until we get these folks processed. So sentencing in Benton County would probably change right now. Well, we recently had an analysis done by a consultant who looked at the jail because I'm very committed to seeing a new jail built in Benton County. He basically said that our jail wags the tail of the dog in Benton County. So all of the sentencing decisions, all of the arrest decisions, all of the sanction decisions are all driven by what our jail capacity is at the time. With this bill, it would add that many more inmates that then even affects even more of those local decisions. And again, you know, if the cost is, if the reimbursement for the daily bed cost can increase significantly, perhaps, you know, perhaps we can rent additional jail beds, but I think that that's even going to be quite competitive as we move on and other counties are looking at renting jail beds.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Sheriff Simpson, before you leave, I had a couple of clarifications. You said that currently Benton County is renting approximately 45 beds from area facilities. Which facilities or which counties are you falling back to?
Mr. Chair, it's actually 40 beds, and it's a combination. It's Lincoln County, Yamhill County, Polk County, and Linn County, and it's just whatever space they might have available at the time.
All right, thank you. And then just for the record, it does appear from this sheet here that Benton County, based on the size of it, of the community, is in dire need of a new facility.
Absolutely.
All right. Fully appreciate that. So was there any discussion with Lane County? Again, knowing that they have at least one full floor that's not being utilized, was there ever any discussions on a more long-term basis of trying to, let's say, use that facility if it would be, I mean, it seems like in distance they're pretty close.
Yes, Mr. Chair. There was a short discussion about it, and my recollection at the time was that the daily bed cost was more than what we're currently paying for the other jails. What we're paying at the other jails is approximately, it's actually less than what the state cost. It's about $77 a day. But what that doesn't include is the personnel costs of the transport deputies, the fuel, the vehicles to transport, and all the additional costs. So as far as Lane County, my recollection was that it was going to be more than what we were currently paying.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward today.
Thank you.
I have two other people on this bill that are scheduled to appear to want to testify, Paul Snyder and Steve Berger. Why don't you all please come forward. Is there anyone else who will want to testify on Senate Bill 728?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the
Judiciary Committee, my name is Steve Berger, representing the Oregon Association of Community Correction Directors.
Steve, I'm going to ask you to just pick the mic up. It does record, but it would probably be better.
I'll keep my comments brief in that I signed up for this bill in error. I am actually here to testify on 729 and 730. So if you could make those amendments, I apologize for the inconvenience.
Wait a second. Okay. Paul.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here on purpose. I think there are a number of questions and issues that, if a work group were to be created, would be beneficial to address. And I think the sheriffs have hit on most of the ones that I would raise. I'd just like to list what they might be. One is that, of course, how many people are we talking about here? A second would be, who are they? What are their characteristics? What are their problems? What are their criminal behaviors? And in conjunction with that, the next step, of course, would be what's the appropriate system response to that behavior? And I think after that, of course, it would lead us in the direction of saying, does that system response exist today? And if it doesn't exist, what would it cost to provide it? And finally, of course, an issue that's important to us is how do we be sure that the resources would be present over time? And that's an issue, I think, Mr. Chair, that we've dealt with in the past, as you know, with respect to Senate Bill 1145. And we've been making progress. You know, it's been a long road, but I think we're getting closer to reaching a point where there can be assurance as to what the resources will be, and what's their relationship to what the actual costs are at the local level to address the problems that they're there to address. In relationship to that, though, we're kind of alarmed at page 6 of the bill, lines 33 to 36. I think there's a great deal of value to providing for the historical memory with respect to Senate Bill 1145. It's been 16 years since that bill was passed, but nonetheless, it was a partnership. It was an agreement. It wasn't legislation that was passed over the objections of the counties. It was legislation that was developed in conjunction with the counties and with the Sheriff's Association. And as you know, Mr. Chair, and other members of the committee, the importance of the partnership agreement is near and dear to us because it was an arrangement that we made together. We said, okay, we can handle this population, but we need these resources to be present in order to do it. And I think that language is important to keep, biennium after biennium after biennium, so that all of us recognize that there was an agreement back in 1995. And it's important to all of us to honor what it was intended to do.
All right. Questions, comments?
Thank you very much. Steve, why don't you just stay there
if you're going to be testifying on the next one. And I'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 728. Open a public hearing on 729.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 729 comes to you from the Committee on the Judiciary. Removes the sunset provision in Section 21 of House Bill 3508, which allows a reduction in the period of active probation supervision, effective upon passage. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, under the background, you will see the language from Section 21 of House Bill 3508 of the 2009 session.
All right, thank you. And at this time, I'd also like to have Brad Berry come forward, please. And I'll ask, is there going to be anyone else who will want to give testimony on Senate Bill 729? Brad, why don't you get us started on this one?
Thank you. Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Brad Berry. I'm the Yamhill County District Attorney, and I also chair the Oregon District Attorneys Association Legislative Committee. Thank you for the chance to talk briefly on this bill. As I indicated as I signed up, the DAs are neutral on this bill with just a couple of observations and, I suppose, questions. From our perspective, the issue of moving probationers to inactive status is one that I think causes some concern early on, but as time went on, it was a little difficult to tell what what impact it had. I'm told, actually was just emailing with my local community corrections director, and I'm going to guess that Steve may correct me if I'm wrong here, but he indicated, and I'm not sure if this number is local or if it's statewide, but there's only about 12% of probationers that are moving to inactive status as the bill originally anticipated. The reason for that primarily is that probationers have not completed the terms and conditions of the probation at the time that they would have been expected to move to inactive status. And because of that, then they remain active and have continued supervision, assistance, and resources which are put to those probationers. The point that I think I wanted to make, the two points I want to make are these. First, I don't know, candidly, whether or not the original intent of this part of House Bill 3508, which created the active-inactive status for probationers, I know it was originally designed to save money. I don't know if it really has, and I suppose that deserves some look to determine whether it really has done what it intended to do. The other part, though, that I think is more important is as we now get through the 2011 session and we look back of many of the provisions from House Bill 3508, I would strongly urge this committee, since I think much of it will be heard here, to look at all of the provisions of 3508 as a group and not individually. I think we come in and say this may have worked, this didn't work, but if we lay them all out on the table and figure out what achieved what was sought to be achieved, mostly money savings, and what achieved what was sought to be achieved without harming or risking public safety, I think as a group is a much better approach. And that's really, from a neutral perspective, I think on the streets, in the trenches, this bill hasn't done a lot that I can tell, and I'm just anecdotally now from my perspective, but I do think as we look at 3508 as a whole, we should look at all of its provisions and weigh them against one another. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Steve, we'll give everyone in.
Chair Przanski, Steve Berger, representing Oregon Association of Community Correction Directors. We are supporting the Dash 1 amendments that were issued today. If I could generally address Mr. Bradbury's comments relative to why there was, I guess, maybe a 10 to 12% active transfer to inactive from formal supervision. The primary push there was that they became unfunded, first off. Many counties chose to pursue transfer of these cases to bench probation because of the liability. When these cases are, the way the original bill was written, when they are transferred to inactive, the local community correction agencies continued to have, I guess, a line to those cases of responsibility where they had to administratively track those cases for purposes of changing of address, if they traveled outside the state. But once they were transferred to inactive, they were no longer funded. The original concept of the bill that was proposed in 3508, I handed the committee a study by the Pew Center on the States for Public Safety Performance. It actually outlines what is identified as an earned compliance credit. And I think the original intent when 3508 was trying to address inactive probation was trying to target those offenders who had earned compliance and had tried to provide some incentive for the offender to actively engage in the supervision process and the reformation process, and as they were compliant, they would earn credits, and ultimately, if they were successful in that endeavor, they would then go to inactive after approximately about half of their sentence. The way 3508 actually implemented that policy is it removed that incentive, and it also removed those cases from removed those cases from funding, and then basically put the ownership on the counties to continue to provide an administrative level of service without any direct funding. And so in application, a lot of counties chose to submit those cases to the courts, asking them to be totally transferred to bench probation rather than inactive. The Dash 1 amendments go back to the original language that was proposed, which asks for an earned compliance credit process where the offender can earn time based upon their performance, similar, I guess, to what we do in our jails, in that if an offender is compliant and they do not have disciplinary process, they get credit off of their sentence. Same type of principle with probation.
Okay. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, a couple questions for either one. We created something new 2 years ago, put a sunset on it to review it. We haven't had enough time to really get hard data on it. Why would we totally remove the sunset rather than just extending it to see if it works?
Chair Przanski, Senator Cruz, members of the committee, I think there's two things. I think it's still, there is a lot of data, I think, that is probably out there, and Steve can probably address that. I know their system is very capable of, when I ask questions in our county, of coming up with some pretty good information. It would at least give information about how many of the intended individuals actually went to inactive, and I would assume the savings. I think Steve's really offered some interesting perspective that the Community Corrections has when we talk about potential liability by moving people to inactive status. So it's a little difficult there. I think there is data that could be had. I think you could ascertain whether or not we're really getting savings from this from what was in 3508. Again, I'm kind of guessing because I don't have that data. The DAs don't have that data, obviously.
Chair Przanski, Senator Cruz, if I may offer some additional context. The Dash 1 amendments allow the cases to move through the system, and the actual intent originally with 3508 was to take those cases and totally remove them from the system so there would be no liability. When we added some language that required them to still be under some form of supervision, that inactive piece, that's what created some of the rub administratively. I can speak to some experience in some of the counties that I'm familiar with. The transfer of cases was as high as about of a third is what I heard for some of the cases that were actually eligible to move to inactive. But again, that the ability that I guess Community Corrections would seek is the ability to totally remove them from the system based upon their compliant behavior, rather than keep them under some form of inactive supervision and asking those counties to maintain that liability. The earned compliance allows those cases to move out of the system based upon their compliance.
Mr. Chair, I guess just problematic, and you also spoken, like I wasn't on this committee last time, so I didn't get the full breadth of the discussion on the House bill. And you're saying we ought to look at all components of it rather than look at them individually. I guess that's my concern is we're trying a new way of doing business, and from my perspective, to assume in 2 years that we know yes or no may be a bit premature.
First, Council.
Mr. Berger, my recollection on the research as it relates to people on probation is the longer they're on probation without violating the probation, the less likely they are to violate. Is that correct? So if someone has not violated in the first year, the chances of them violating really diminish.
Chair Przanski, Council Taylor. That's a very deep question and a lot of different responses. I don't mean to be short, but the longer you supervise something, the longer you look at something, you increase the opportunity to see different things. So I guess for the purposes of community supervision, what we are typically doing is addressing their criminogenic needs. What are the highest risk factors that we need to address to work with that offender in the community to make sure they don't come back into the system? Once you address those things, if we can move them out of the system, you know, we've done our job. the inability to move those cases out of the system simply lengthens a period of time where you are taking responsibility and the liability for all activities in a community, regardless of their level of risk.
Gregor, when you talk about liability, I assume you mean civil liability in the sense that you have a duty to supervise someone and that may create potential liability. Is that correct?
Chair Przanski, Council Taylor, I'm actually responding to the responsibility of the total supervision of the case. For example, if we have an offender who's been under supervision for 18 months, but then it comes to our attention that, there's some minor level activity in a community, say the person's playing their music too loud, they know the person's on supervision, that sparks contact by the police contact the probation officer, we're obligated to respond to the community. Is that necessarily a level of behavior that merits intensive supervision? No. But it does merit and it does require a response by the agency responsible for supervising them. So there's a workload, I guess, addressed to that, keeping them on supervision for a period of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berry, I know you said that the District Attorney's Association is neutral on the bill. And I'm sorry if I missed this. Did you say whether you have a position on the Dash 1 amendment?
Chair Przanski, Senator Bonamici, members of the committee, I did not, but I do. I didn't say, I had not seen a copy of it, although I'm familiar with the concept of the earned time credits on probation. Here's my principal concern with it as I look at it. Most probationers, well, I think it's simpler, we're around 60 or 70% of felons on conviction are placed on probation in this state. It might be a little bit more. Most of those persons placed on probation fall on the grid blocks from 4 and under. 3 and under in the grid means that they're placed on probation for a presumptive 18 months. 4, 5, and 6, they'd be on probation for a presumptive 2 years. The problem with, as I read this very quickly, says that it's shall language. It doesn't say shall, it says is. The probationer is eligible for earned time credits. The principal problem there is the vast majority of these individuals have treatment needs. They fall in several groups. They can be cognitive behavioral treatment. They can be often alcohol and drug treatment, sex offender treatment, domestic violence treatment. And almost all of those programs require more than one half of the probation term to complete. DV treatment by law is a minimum of 52 weeks. A&D treatment usually takes over a year because of missteps that a person will have along the way, and they'll test dirty, they'll use, they fall back in their treatment, not necessarily start over, but they certainly fall back and begin again. Sex offender treatment is typically 2 years in length. And so I think with the Dash 1, if you were looking at something as an earned time credit, it also should have some assumption that they've completed terms and conditions of the probation, in particular treatment.
As a follow-up, can Mr. Berger respond to that, if he's interested?
Chair Przanski, Senator Bonamici, I would agree with District Attorney here in that as I read the Dash 1 amendments and as I understand the current provisions of 3508, they do require the compliance and the successful completion of those conditions. So in the case where somebody is continuing to engage in treatment, whether it be domestic violence or substance abuse treatment, they may be accruing credit, but until they've satisfied the conditions of the court or the releasing authority, it's my interpretation that they would not be eligible for release. Even if they've been on supervision for that 50% time, they have not completed the conditions of the releasing of the supervisory authority, so therefore, they may have the credit, but they haven't completed the condition. Once they complete the conditions, then they may transfer.
Thank you.
All right. Brad, one thing I want to clarify, you're saying we want to look at the total cost of everything and its context, and I assume you mean in the, let's say, at the community level, based on my understanding, the Secretary of State's audit on 3508 said that there was like a savings of about $25 million. I'll have Mr. Prince come up here and give us a little bit more clarity. But your context is looking at the whole picture where the state may have had the savings, there could have been other costs and other impacts in other areas?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my comment really was more that, for example, just this morning, we have the piece here of acted VIN, active probation, and we're going to talk in a minute about the maximum sanction on probation revocation is 60 days. Those are just two of a litany of provisions that were in 3508. My comments were more, I think they should all be laid out onto the table, and we really should weigh them against one another to see what has had the benefit that was intended, mostly cost. Also look at what the increased cost has been to the community, public safety-wise, if any. I'm willing to acknowledge, if any. But I think to look at them one by one, really, I stand up and talk about individual pieces of it, when really, if we have that broader whiteboard of all of it test, look at how they all compare to one another and how they've impacted our community corrections, jails, public safety, I think it's a better way to look at it than piecemeal, which really makes it difficult for us to say, well, that is more important, this is less important, this is done better than we thought it would, this is done worse than it has, and the like, because when we look at them individually, some are worse ideas than others, some are better ideas than others, but we don't get to weigh them against one another.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Craig, I understand you were going to give some testimony on this bill. And while he's coming up, again, is there anyone else who will want to give testimony on Senate Bill 729?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Craig Prinz from the Criminal Justice Commission. I think Mr. Berger hit a lot of the things that I was going to say. This bill was part of 3508. Mr. Chair, on your comments, the Secretary of State's audit did look at earned time. The amount of money that you were referring to was the total amount of earned time that was given in the year they looked at, which I think was 2009. And then the different sections, when we looked at this one with Mark Cadott and Ginger Martin, I would agree that this really did not make the savings that we anticipated, the 729. I think it was because, as Mr. Berger said, the incentives were backwards, basically, for community corrections. They did not actually put as many people on inactive supervision as had been hoped or anticipated. All of these, you're seeing lots of different bills. This is basically, we're looking at bills in the prison system. We're looking at either bills that reduce the length of stay or have certain people stay in the community rather than go to a Department of Corrections bed. This concept is the same for probation. You're looking at, there's bills I've seen drafted that look at just taking whole categories of people out of the community corrections grants. This one actually looks at lowering or shortening the length of probation for certain offenders. This has been done in a couple of states. In Nevada and Arizona, it's been done. And I asked my counterpart in those states to give me the data they have on this, and I will give it to Council Taylor when it's available. Kind of to Senator Cruz's point, I think that this is a concept that didn't really work as we anticipated, this actual section. And I think, I think the dash ones more get to what folks thought we were doing in the first place. And so I don't think it would, I don't think there was a lot of savings on this section, Senator, to answer your question. But we could look at the dash ones and work with a stakeholder group and try to figure out how many people it would apply to and what the impact would have on the community corrections grants.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Craig? Thank you for coming forward. I'm closing the public hearing on 729, opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 730.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 730 comes to you from the Committee on the Judiciary. Continues the limitation of 60 days that a court can impose as a sanction on a person who has received a sentence of presumptive probation and has violated the conditions of probation. Chair, members of the committee, this is another bill that comes out of the Senate Bill 3508 from last session.
All right, thank you. I have Brad Berry and Steve Berger again, if y'all two would come forward. And Craig, were you also going to be giving testimony on this one? All right.
And is there anyone else that, here today that wants to give testimony on Senate Bill 730? Brad, you want to get us started? Or Steve? I'll flip. Why don't we do that? Steve, we'll let you go first this time.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Steve Berger, representing the Oregon Association of Community Correction Directors. This morning, we are simply providing support for the continuation of those provisions in Senate Bill 3508. Basically, you know, the quick summary is that prior to this provision, the average length of the average length previously imposed for a revocation was about 84 days. And in application over the last 2 years, with the cap being at 60, from our experience, we can't see that there's been any significant compromise in public safety. The response for transition is still a positive, and we're able to work with it, and we've had a significant savings to the system overall by that application. So we'd be looking for the continuation of the 60-day cap.
All right, thank you. Brad?
Thank you. My name is Brad Berry. I'm the Yamhill County District Attorney, and I chair the Oregon District Attorneys Association Legislative Committee. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, district attorneys are opposed to this bill. And let me, if I can, try to put this into perspective. Over the last, as long as I've been doing this and regularly being before the committees in this building, there has been, I think, a logical and substantive shift in emphasis, which has dealt with treatment for offenders in the criminal justice system. And what this particular provision of 3508 did, by limiting the ultimate sanction for revocation on a felony probation, was to also take the incentive away from offenders from completing and fully engaging in treatment. In Yamhill County, I handle about 80% of the felony probation violations personally. I've gotten to know many of those offenders who come through the doors over and over and have had issues. We have high-risk treatment courts in my county and the like. And what we've really seen, which I had never experienced before the implementation of the maximum 60-day sanction, is a defendant standing up a relatively short time into probation and being before the court on a probation violation, not accepting a sanction by their probation officers, but actually coming back to court and asking that their probation be revoked. And the simple reason is this: when all is said and done, the court can impose the ultimate sanction, a 60-day sanction, if they've not been convicted of a new crime, and they'll end up doing about 45 days by the time programs and earned time credits are given them. Now, there is a logic to that. We may think that offenders are very short-sighted, and in fact, they can be short-sighted at times, but when you look at the fact that, as I mentioned in my last testimony, that A&D treatment typically takes more than a year. Domestic violence treatment is at least 52 weeks. Sex offender treatment is 2 years. It's not uncommon that offenders who are convicted of domestic violence are required by the court to engage in both domestic violence treatment as well as A&D treatment. Well, the sheer onerous conditions that the court places upon them for the purposes of treatment to ensure that they don't reoffend and that our communities are safer and their families are safer, it's just much easier to step up and say, revoke me. I'll do my 45 days and I'll go about my business. Now, in fact, they end up on post-prison supervision after that, typically for 1 year, but it's not uncommon that those conditions are not further, are not as stringent after that. They may get sanctioned by their parole officer, their post-prison supervision officer. But the practical matter is, I oftentimes find myself on the opposite end of counsel table saying, judge, you ought to exhaust custody units and sanction them all you can, leaving them on probation rather than saying revocation. And defense counsel saying, revoke my client, judge, because that's what he wants. And he wants it because it's easier. Where we have moved towards a system that really emphasizes treatment, this provision of 3508 has created a disincentive for offenders to fully engage and complete treatment. Lastly, I would point out that, again, this is a piece of 3508. And as I said with Senate Bill 729, I think we ought to be laying all of the provisions of 3508 onto the table, look at them all together, weigh them against one another, as well as how they have, if at all, impacted public safety.
Thanks. Questions, comments? I think that's it. Thank you very much for coming forward. Again, is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on 7:30? Not seeing anyone, we'll close that public hearing. And that takes care of our public hearings. We're now going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 45.
Mr. Chairman, the committee Senate Bill 45 comes to you from the Department of Justice. It standardized a 30-day request for hearing a child hearing. Removes the presumption of inability to pay child support for those receiving foster care payment, allows service of notice of child support proceeding by mail with delivery confirmation as well as certified mail, allows persons seeking limited support enforcement services such as accounting, disbursement assistance to complete a simple application form when they don't need full services. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have the dash two amendments in front of you. And basically what they do is that there were some places, what they're trying to do is standardize all proceedings notes at 30 days. This is a dash two. You don't have
them? You should have them. They were in on the packet, today's packet.
No, I got an agenda and an amendment to 729.
That's on the medium materials file.
Did you send them?
Using paper instead of computers.
Yeah.
Can we just look at them real quick?
Sure. Can I request that what we do in our committee is we send out, when we have an amendment, we do send a notice to the committee members that's available with a link. So I think that would be helpful because we won't know if it's available unless we actually go on the file. So if you could, when an amendment gets posted, send us a link.
Sure.
Thank you.
We're trying to save trees.
Yeah.
I understand. But what
kind of trees are you trying to save would be a good question there, but never mind.
Different committee.
Wrong committee.
Senator Cruz.
Well, when we have industrial hemp, we won't have to worry about that, right?
Right. Did you want to look at it? Yes, please.
One motion?
Hold on.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 45.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 45. Has everyone had an opportunity
yes.
to look at them?
Yep.
Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, due to my difficulty trying to figure out this paperless system, we don't have a fiscal impact statement yet on the dash two amendments. Like three attempts for me to send it out. So if I could ask if you could roll the bill over to Wednesday for the purposes of getting the fiscal.
We will do that. At this point, we're going to go ahead and continue a work session for Senate Bill 45. It will be scheduled to roll over to our next.
Yeah.
Well, you say Wednesday?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, yes. That's where I'm next on.
Okay. So we're going to do this Wednesday. So 2 days from today, we'll have a work session on Senate Bill 45. And we have adopted the dash twos into the bill. Is there anything else we need to do with this one? If not, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 45. And I believe that completes the work for today. We're scheduled to be here tomorrow, Tuesday, March 1st, since this is the 28th already, right? March 1st at 8:30. With that, we're adjourned.